Hello and welcome. Thank you for listening to a podcast from Topics Norsvin. In our podcast, we discuss various topics related to swine genetics, our view of the industry and market developments. This podcast offers information in a lighthearted way, but covers serious topics. So grab a seat at the table of our Topics Norsvin lounge and enjoy listening.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Topics Norsvin podcast. My name is Matt Schulte. I am currently meat scientist in the U.S. Division covering research and development within the U.S. and technical services across North and South America. Today with me is our great guest and head of our meat group, Grant Walling. Hello, Grant. How are you doing?
I'm great, Matt. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Just had the 4th of July this past day, so it was a good celebration for the states, and I'm getting ready to get back to things with research projects happening today, and so that's keeping me busy. So,
and how was 4th of the July? Was that big parties, a lot of big eating, or was it a quiet affair for you?
Yeah, no, it was still pretty good. I was able to spend some time with friends grilling out, and there's always parades going on in every little town in the Midwest, so had that. And once I got to my hotel last evening, I was able to catch a lot of the fireworks on the drive up, so that was really good. I got to see them across multiple states and multiple different little towns, so that was very good.
And more importantly, what were you grilling?
Oh. We were grilling some pork chops, a whole pork loin, I guess, and also had done some hamburgers as well. Had to do a mix of that for the crowd we had there. There was about 20 people, so wanted to meet all the demands if we could. But yeah, the pork loin turned out very well.
Yeah, you didn't overcook it, did you?
No, most definitely not. 145.
Let's keep the message consistent here, yeah? You know, meat thermometer in the middle of it and basically take it off as soon as you need to, yeah?
Yes, most definitely. Take it off a little early, allow for that rest time, and it'll hit that 145 perfectly. So
wonderful. Right. So there we were. You know, you've gone from 4th of July celebrations and grilling, and basically we're going to keep the topic on various different meat qualities, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Today we're going to be discussing a bit of two very different topics. The first is belly characteristics and selection as a genetics company, how we're going through some of that and some of our prioritization there. The other portion is some of what I've been working on since starting with Topics Norsvin and focusing on pork products and the shelf life of those. So those are two very different topics, but both are, I'd say, very relative to not only our customers, but also the consumer base, with some of the shelf life stuff being related to sustainability of pork products and reducing food waste. So,
okay. And so pork belly selection, I know that's a project that you've been putting a lot of time in. I know I've sort of seen some of the bits that have been going along, but do you want to give us a bit of background on that one as to what's been happening with the pork, you know, what you've been doing on this project and what we're trying to achieve with it?
So I have basically been tasked with looking into the market and seeing what the characteristics are that are most important to our customers and then the customers of our customers. So that be the retail stores or food service side of things. And then the packers are some of our primary customers, or at least that deal with our end product. And so been tasked with understanding what needs and the different characteristics that they're looking for in those bellies. So whether it be the actual dimensions of that, or if it be other characteristics such as the fat quality of those products.
And so how do we go about finding this out? Because doesn't everyone have a different requirement, or actually do we find that there's some broad agreement, you know, in terms of what people are wanting, you know, sort of globally? Because at the end of the day, we have to serve a global market. We're not going to come up with a different pig in every single market we go into.
Yeah, not going to lie, when I started out with this task, I thought I was going to get a different answer from every single packer of wanting this specific trait or that specific trait. But in general, they've all been fairly consistent in terms of fat quality as well as characteristics, wanting thicker, more of those number one bellies. So those bellies that we're not going to lose yield on because they are too narrow in certain portions, but they've really been able to see a consistent demand or request across the different packers that I've interacted with and been able to just have a kind of open discussion with them about what some of the important characteristics that they want to aim for. And so it's been fairly consistent there in being able to want that need for a basically thicker belly for those.
So you said thicker belly, but you also said number one belly. Do you want to just explain to people listening what a number one belly is? We all want our product to be number one, but do you want to describe a number one belly for me?
Yeah. So that's basically the knowledge or term, I guess, that's used in the industry. There's number one bellies and number two. Number one bellies are full thick slices that can be utilized for either retail or food service sales, and without any discounts being too narrow or not long enough or wide enough for the general retail package that you see on the shelf in the store. Versus those number two bellies, those are going to be ones that are very narrow, can really be not as deep in terms of the depth of that slice. And so you're going to see a really thin slice, and that's not typically as appetizing to consumers and wanting those slices that are probably an inch and a half or so in thickness. They're not that thick all the way down through the belly. So then they get discounted to a number two belly.
And presumably the product that comes from that number two belly, that's becoming a more budget, that's a budget slice essentially, and therefore going at a different product level, yeah?
Yep. So that would be turned into just end pieces or honestly bacon bits that you can put on, or at least in the US that you can put on your salads and make it a little more appetizing, adding that pork product to it.
To be honest, putting meat on a salad is always going to improve it though, yeah? Especially if it's bacon, yeah? Salad has to include bacon. I think we need to make that as a rule going forward.
Yes, it most definitely should. Grant, have you seen any differences in demands for pork belly characteristics in Europe? I'm obviously more focused on the U.S. and North and South America market, at least from what my reach outs have been. But I know I've asked a few times to look into the Europe demand. Is there any differences, or are they pretty similar to what we have here as well?
I think overall pretty similar. I think one of the challenges being is if we looked historically, we did have quite a deep belly. And what happened is basically people want pigs to become more efficient and certainly more feed efficient. And we've produced a carcass that is leaner. And because the belly has quite a high fat content, basically it's probably removed more from the belly than it has from other primals in the carcass. And it's got to a point where actually the depth of the belly starts to hit these thresholds between what you call a number one and a number two. And then at that point, it then becomes a bit more of an issue. And we have had some feedback in some cases where products that they used to do in the past, for example, belly roasts and everything, are become a little bit more difficult to do if you've only got thinner bellies. And certainly your number two bellies, but even some of the ones that are at the thinner end of the number one bellies, they just don't suit that product anymore. And one of the feedbacks that we got was it started to impact our product range because we're having to withdraw some of these products. I suppose the one market that's maybe a little bit different, some of the feedback we get from Germany is that there's always a content, always a discussion about what the lean content should be on the belly and the ratio of fat to lean. And a lot of people talk about, 60-40 lean to fat or 70-30. But in Germany, they're even, they're pushing to go leaner and leaner. So they start to talk about 80-20. And I think that's probably the only market where they wanted leaner bellies. But the problem is with those leaner bellies, as you say, difficult to make them deep.
Yep, yep, most definitely. And I have heard similar things in the U.S., or at least for that 60-40 fat or lean to fat ratio. And so that's very interesting, that a little bit different demand there from Germany. But I think overall we are seeing a consistent, that, like you said, the 60 to 40 or 70 to 30, something along those lines.
Because the carcass is actually getting longer, there's a danger that that belly, even though it's the same weight, actually gets stretched out over a longer area, and therefore the shape starts to change rather than the actual weight of it.
Yeah, no, I've been to several bacon processing facilities and looking into that and seeing if there is issues with the length of the belly or width of it, and what's desirable. So far, related to those heavy carcasses, there haven't been any issues with those characteristics, at least, because longer bellies doesn't hurt, because you're going to have more of those center slices, center belly slices, and less, so basically more pounds of belly and less end pieces being cut off. But in terms of width, there really is, it's based on what the machines that we have, and to meet that retail demand for those consumers seeing that visual package and deciding their purchasing decision there, they typically cut off the width side of the belly as is. So that's really not an issue either. I would say one of the bigger things is, as we continue to feed these animals to the pigs to larger and larger weights, if they're laying down more fat at the end and affecting that lean to fat ratio, but that's about the only thing I've seen for negatives related to the belly characteristics.
I must admit that that discussion about belly width, you know, a number of people have said to me, you know, don't bother making them any wider, because it really isn't worth it, because we're just trimming this stuff off anyway. They like the length because it's more slices. They like the depth because, as you say, that therefore means it's going as a premium slice. But width, extra width is not valuable at all on the belly. And yet you were saying about, you know, sort of fat. I think one of the feedbacks that we sometimes get is about quality of fat. So it's not about the amount of fat, but actually the saturation of that fat and basically how firm it is. Are you picking up any? I know the US has historically, depending on the prices of raw materials, has looked at DDGS, and that can sometimes start to impact on the fat saturation levels.
Yeah, no, most definitely. That's been the primary item of interest that I've talked to packers about related to fat quality is that basically as feed costs have gone up in the US, there's been some increases in use of those DDGs. And so that'll result in basically the increase in unsaturation. So as we have more unsaturated fats, they're going to be softer, harder to slice, reduce our sliceability of those. And so that's been the main thing that I've heard from packers. And especially going through the COVID situation of 2020 with some layoffs, I've actually heard some packers talk about how the people they normally had check that and be kind of quality checks of making sure that the bellies are meeting certain ranges for the saturation levels. They actually didn't have that person on the line anymore with some of the labor shortages they have been seeing. So it's kind of been a very interesting aspect of trying to balance this quality aspect, but deal with some of the labor shortages that they're seeing.
You've collected a lot of information. You've talked to a lot of markets. We've got an idea about the desired dimensions and the direction they want to move. We know about some of the other quality things, about the lean to fat ratio and the issues regarding fat firmness. What are you and the rest of your project team, where does this information go? How does this help us at Topix Norsvin? And more importantly, how does it help our customer base?
Yeah, so I think from collecting this information, the biggest things that we found out is that a desire for those thicker bellies is wanted without basically resulting in negative issues on the lean to fat ratio. And I think as Topix Norsvin, we utilize the CT scanner technology on each of our boars, and this allows us to actually look down to the individual muscle level and are able to potentially select for more of those muscles and potentially size to meet that demand for those thicker bellies without compromising the lean to fat ratio in those bellies. So I think that's a huge benefit to our customers of being able to provide more of those thick number one slices while not limiting the lean to fat ratio and allowing for some of those advantages for our customers.
So this information is then going to be given back to the guys that are looking at the CT scanning images and basically allowing them to understand what a valuable belly looks like from a CT scan point of view. Is that the aim going forward, so we can put a value onto those bellies?
Yep. That is definitely the end product of being able to add value to that product for our customers using the CT scanner information.
And that'll be a huge step forward from what we could do in the past, because bellies haven't been easy to measure on, particularly on a live animal, have they?
No, they're not very easy to measure on the live animal at all, just because of the fact that can't see down to that individual level. But now with those advancements, I think that's been a huge benefit to being able to select for that potentially.
So quite an interesting development. What's the sort of the time frame in terms of you guys getting this information to the teams on the CT scanner? You know, when can we start to see some of this actually coming into place?
I think the time frame for that is within the next 3 months. We want to finish up some of our market analysis, finalize, make sure that that's consistent across our customer base. And then from there, basically what we're trying to optimize is some of the selection criteria for the CT scanning. So I would assume within or about 6 months, be able to finalize some of that. We don't have a direct time frame on that, but I think projecting out that there is potentials for being within the year of having some of that data finalized and starting to add that to our genetic selection.
So exciting times there. And you were going to talk to me as well about another project that you're working on. Do you want to just basically introduce that one?
Yeah. So the other projects that I've been working on more recently is looking into shelf life. We've had several customers within the U.S., especially. I think this is application worldwide, but there is quite a bit of interest from several different parties in the U.S. that want to focus on shelf life and primarily on some of the food waste reduction efforts of each of those partners that we're working with. And so basically with shelf life, what we're looking at is the point at which the product is either considered spoiled due to bacterial growth or an unacceptable unacceptable odor, flavor, or physical characteristics such as the lean and fat color. And so that's what some of our customers are looking into as well, is how can they maximize that shelf life to reduce food waste that we see in retail stores or other locations. What I'm trying to do is add, or as Topics Norseman, what we're trying to do is add value by being able to reduce shelf life losses and thus reduce food waste from those retail stores.
Reduce shelf life losses. That's a double negative there, but we'll let you get away with that one. Yeah. I'm always struggling with a trait like shelf life, because there's so many things that can go into it. You know, if it's the wrong color, then you remove it from the shelf. If you get excessive amounts of drip come from that product, you remove it from the shelf. If bacterial growth is excessive, it's coming off the shelf. So Is it one trait, or actually is it just an amalgamation of probably three or four different things, all of which can trigger a shelf life loss?
Yep. So I would say it's just a combination of many different factors that will result in and impact those characteristics. So for example, from the management side, the way you feed the animal could result in differences in the shelf life of the product. From the packer side, the way you chill the product, if you're not chilling rapid enough or if you're chilling too slow from there, could impact the color characteristics of that product and ultimately result in shelf life losses that way. So I think there's a combination of everyone kind of working together to maximize that shelf life, but each party maximizing their own conditions as much as they can.
Yeah, I can imagine some of our research team are sort of probably, you know, sort of having a heart attack at the moment when you describe this problem, because it's so multifactorial. It's a real challenging one to take on, isn't it?
Yes, no, it definitely is with the many different factors. One thing with the research projects that we run here in the U.S., we're trying to, I guess we're minimizing that variation by looking within individual plants, seeing the variation when they do have a very rapid chill versus a slower chill system, and some of their processes throughout the fabrication line as well. So we're trying as much as we can to look into some of those factors as well. But as you're saying, our research team is definitely cringing as we talk about how many different factors can affect that.
And I'm going to throw another one in here, actually. We talked before about fat saturation levels, but we do know that I think bacterial growth prefers unsaturated fats, don't they? So that's another one as well, that the different types of fat can basically spoil at different rates, yes?
Yep. So once again, coming back to that nutrition side, if you're feeding different ingredients, can definitely impact the shelf life aspects of that product.
So you've done some studies looking at loins on the some of the lean and fat color stability. How's all that going?
It's actually going very well. I've partnered with some universities at least to look into these shelf life characteristics. Universities within the U.S. and we're seeing some fairly large differences in shelf life characteristics, even within some of our own genetic lines. We can go and see variations in the color stability of the fat and lean, or some of the other factors from a genetic standpoint, at least what we can impact. And so that's what I'm looking into is there, number one, a difference between our genetic lines, and number two, how can we continue to select for characteristics or add to our genetic portfolio of being able to better understand those products and that shelf life stability?
So this is a multi-pronged attack, yeah? It's yes, there's things we can do on the genetic side, but there's then obviously these management recommendations that we can be helping with to assist with this project, yeah?
Yes, most definitely.
I suppose out of those, you know, we talked about it being a multi-pronged attack here. Which are the ones where genetic selection do you think is probably, I should be answering this as the geneticist probably, but, you know, where do you think the management's approach is going to be most important? And where do you think you're going to look at the geneticist to try and help you fix it?
I think on the management side, it's definitely consideration of well, from the farm side is what we're feeding. If we're feeding some of those high DDGs, some of that products that'll increase the unsaturated levels, fat levels, we will go and obviously affect the shelf life of that product. So we definitely need to be considering that in the product shelf life as well. But from the packer side, if we can maximize some of those chilling conditions, I've talked to a few that are very focused on shelf life, and they're able to actually extend the shelf life of that product to under very good chilling conditions to 40 plus days. So it's a very impressive way that they're looking into that and trying to maximize using their different chilling and plant conditions within their own plant. So it's very interesting to see their take and approach on maximizing that shelf life.
40 plus days for shelf life, that sounds pretty impressive for pork. Where did they start? Where did they start this project at before they got to there, Matt? Because 40 plus days, I think, you know, you'd be pretty pleased if you could achieve that every week.
Yeah, no, the big areas that they've started that on is number one, I think the number one thing that they saw, a reduction in bacterial growth and minimization of that aspect, was their snap chill system. So it's a very rapid chill at the beginning of the chilling process. And so that's where they saw a huge reduction in that I think the second big one was antimicrobial spray that they utilize, just basically a wash right before they go into the chilling coolers. And that was the second big reduction that they saw in preventing some of those food waste or shelf life reduction areas. So I think that's the two big ones that they've seen on that.
And I suppose from our point of view, you know, yes, there are nutritionists out there, but, you know, within our global technical services team, I should probably at this point put an advert up for our nutrition team, because if nutrition is having an important impact on there, then they can come along and they can supply advice, or people can use their own nutritionist as well, obviously.
Yep, yep, most definitely.
And so are we starting to see any changes with some of these plants in terms of which animals they're wanting to bring in, or are they putting any pressures on producers to produce particular types of animals in order to actually try and help this shelf life project?
I think the big thing that they've really pushed for is they've been, some of the plants have been monitoring those unsaturated fat levels, you know, not only for shelf life aspects, but other cutability and processing aspects. So if they can minimize feeding of DDGs in highly unsaturated products, I think they can. But in terms of looking at, I'd say more the genetic component, that's kind of their next step. So they've optimized their process for product quality and in maintaining that high shelf life standards. But now they're going to be looking more into the genetic component and some of those factors related to specific genetics, if there is ones that have minimized basically limited shelf life there. I think that's some of their next steps in the process.
And hopefully that's where we come in and can hopefully make a, you know, sort of a positive development in terms of look at where we are now, but also look at the direction that those guys want to go and make sure that our product is actually moving in that direction and not giving them long-term problems. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Grant, as the geneticist, what's some of the factors that we can, as a genetics company, go in and focus on to help to assist with these aspirations for increased shelf life and reduced food waste?
Yeah, thanks for throwing that back to me. I'm supposed to be speaking to a meat scientist on this one, but since you've put it that way, I suppose a lot of the traits that we're talking about here, you know, things like drip loss and color, they are heritable, so there are things that we can do about it. However, heritabilities tend to be 20 to 40%. So 20 to 40% of the variation that we see can be controlled by the individual genetics of the animal. The rest of it is to do with all those other things that you've been talking about, you know, how the plant handles them, how the farm manages them, etc. Yes, there's things that we can do. It is limited. Certainly selection for fat quality traits, that tends to be very successful. They tend to be at the higher end. They tend to be quite responsive to selection. Traits such as drip loss, yes, we can do things with that. Obviously, that interacts with a lot of those environmental traits. And, you know, drip loss is something that we routinely measure, as we do with color. Intramuscular fat is something that we look at, less relevant here, unless it's softer fats, in which case that's something that we would routinely measure as well. So a lot of these traits we've actually already measuring. It's a question of, do we need to reprioritize them within our index? And that's always the thing that you have to bear in mind, is that if you need to put greater emphasis on one trait in the index, then it means we're probably going to have to steel it against something else. And that's where meat quality traits are quite challenging, because in some cases, some of their correlations with some of the other desirable traits that pig producers or, you know, integrated pig businesses want to improve are going in the opposite direction. And that's where our bigger challenge comes from. So it then comes down to how we look at the economics of the two. And then we have to sort of balance those two out. But certainly for where there isn't these, you know, very strong negative correlations, there is certainly something that we can do about it. And we're probably collecting the data already. It's a question of working out which ones and how hard we need to actually go at them. So look, as a geneticist, there's always things we can do, but we also have to make sure that we're getting all the other settings right as well.
Yep. Yeah, I think it definitely comes back to the finance side of it, you know, where is some of those factors of what's most important from the customer standpoint or the packer standpoint? So that's a huge variation in as well.
And that's always the challenge. We're constantly running calculations of, you know, is a 0.01 improvement in, for example, food conversion ratio, you know, would you prefer to have that or would you prefer to have 1% less drip loss? And depending on the economics of the market at any particular point in time, you know, those, you know, sort of the relative values of those can change a little bit. Thankfully, if you look over longer term, they don't change too much. And obviously, depending on how integrated your market is as well, you get different answers depending on who you ask.
Yeah.
So if you ask a pig producer, he always wants the food conversion ratio improvement. If you ask the packer, they always want the improvement on the drip loss. And then if you ask the integrator, basically you get somewhere in the middle. So it's not an easy job for the guys that have to set our indexes. I can assure you that, because they constantly have to having to work out basically who to make happy, but also who's going to have to compromise. And it's never comfortable telling which person that it was that lost out. So a tricky job, but it's something that we've been doing for, well, a long, long time now. It was our 100th birthday last year. So, as a breeding company, we've been making tricky decisions for a long time. They're not getting any easier, but in the same way we're used to doing it. So it's not too bad there.
Yeah.
So just going back on what we've been talking about, you know, talking about belly and talking about shelf life. What does the future look like, Matt? Do we end up with some wonderful pieces of wonderful belly slices that we can put on the shelf for sort of 40 days and they still look pristine after 40 days? Or am I being too hopeful here?
I think there's potential down the road, especially with increases in management practices from both the packer producer side as well as our genetic selection. So I think that there is potential, maybe not as much for the belly, but I think other cuts we can continue to maintain a quite large or long shelf life characteristics. Obviously, we'd like to always have the demand where the product's off the shelf and in very short amount of time, but sometimes it might have a little bit longer lags in that time. So that's where we're hoping to be able to meet that demand. I think with shelf life and as we continue our genetic selection for some of the characteristics we discussed, pH and drip loss, I think that we can have some huge impacts by continuing to increase the product characteristics and thus reducing the food waste that we may see from the retail side of things.
So you're sounding very optimistic about this shelf life project, and you sounded a little bit more pessimistic about the belly. I think from a genetic point of view, things like carcass traits, as I said before, they're quite responsive to selection. So actually from a genetic point of view, I think the genetics can certainly help out with the belly going forward, particularly when you've got accurate measurement systems like CT scanning. I'm expecting that to deliver some, you know, quite nice results going forward. And I think we can see some. So if you wearing your meat scientist hat can get excited and very optimistic about the shelf life, I can certainly, with the information that you guys are collecting, certainly see a good future for improving the quality of your bellies. So I think in both cases, we're maybe going to get there in a slightly different route, but I think there's a lot of reason for optimism.
Yes, most definitely.
Right, I've kept you long enough. You've got to go and catch a lot of pigs in a research barn somewhere, haven't you?
Yes, I do. I got that research project going on today. Head into a barn here shortly, and we'll get that underway. Looking into some disease-resistant traits. So it's going to be a good day, and especially after the 4th of July celebration, we're ready to get back after it.
I'll see if you still think it's a good day after you've been catching pigs for a few hours, because, what weight of pigs are you catching?
Right now, they'd probably be around 30 to 40 kilograms or 40, 45 at most. So they're not too big, but big enough that
they're not
we won't
too
have
big,
to
but they
catch
might
them
be quick,
and lift
yeah.
them up.
Well, best of luck with that today. Thanks very much, Matt, for joining me on this podcast. And really good to hear about some of these projects that you're taking.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information on this topic, please contact your local Topknorsvin representative. Subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. Join us again next time.